So, hi, I'm Jaime Rodriguez. I'm Windows Lite Technical Evangelist, and we're going to spend the next 20 or 25 minutes or so talking about submitting your application to the Windows Store. After the training, hopefully you've got a good idea of what the platform is about, and I'm just going to focus a little bit on towards the store. There'll be a little bit of the economics and things we haven't touched on that you care. So feel free to stop me if you have questions specific to the store that I haven't covered. If you haven't, if there's areas that you have from yesterday that you want to dive deeper a little bit into, just let me know, because I'm going to try to focus on, hey, here's what you have to think about before you get to the store. From yesterday, you saw a version of this slide, which just tells you, hey, this is what the store about, right? And there's five big things that we talked about. So design for discovery, I'm going to tell you a little bit of, hey, here are the things that you can do to make sure that your application is discoverable. The unprecedented reach is just, hey, we're in every market. Here's how you prepare. And all of these are actually value props, right? When you're looking at, hey, you're going to get great discovery, you're going to create this amazing reach with 200 countries and all this stuff, this is a really great value prop. But I'm going to focus a little bit more. Instead of selling you into it, I'm going to give you the, hey, here's what you have to do to prepare. A little bit of the other stuff will come through, but that's where we're at. That's what we're going to cover a little bit. So you saw yesterday a little bit of a demo from Aaron, where he showed you one thing that was pretty cool. I think he went into Netflix, and he showed you, hey, with regards to discovery, if I'm in the Netflix website and I can actually my Internet Explorer browser just lights up and tells me something like, hey, you can launch the application or install the application. So I'll show you that a little bit first before we get into it. And there's a couple other things that are interesting with regards to discovery. So here, for example, I can go into Evernote. And you see here, I have the same thing that Aaron showed you yesterday. The button light up, the actual page tools available button lights up. And if I click on it here, you'll see the switch to Evernote app because I actually have it installed. Again, I think yesterday Aaron didn't have it installed, and he clicked on the Netflix app. And then that sends you to the store. So if I didn't have this installed right now, this would send me onto the store, and then I would be able to install the application from there. So this is kind of one of the discovery features that are nice that you can think about. Another one that's really interesting that people could care about is that our whole store is search indexed, right? So when you go in there, when you prepare to submit to our store, make sure you have some metadata that's very definitive with regards to making sure that you have something that's search engine optimized, right? Because, for example, if I go to Bing and I start searching for example, just this exact same thing, I'll just type here, Evernote Windows Store, right? I can go back and look through the results, and some of them will actually send me onto the store, like you see right here, the Evernote app in the Windows Store. I can come back there, and that immediately sends me into the online version of the store. And for click, I can just, from here, I can just click the view on the Windows Store, right? And again, I'm inside the store application, right? So these are a couple of the unique things that we have with regards to making your application very discoverable, right? Right there, I showed you Bing. To be honest, I don't know if Google indexes our store or not. But if anybody's using a search engine that's indexing our catalog, you'll be able to, from the web, they'll be able to search for your app and immediately get forwarded. Right now, I'm right here. This is actually the store application that Aaron showed you yesterday. You can see here, if I click the back button, I'm within the store, right? So that's kind of one of those features that we have that's going to make your applications a lot easier to discover so people can install it faster and obviously give you your money faster. So how hard is that? Let me show you how hard is that. Here's the meta tags that we actually added for the Evernote application such that you can do it. So from you in your website, all you have to do is you go in there and add these two meta tags right here, application ID and package family name. Both of these, before you submit to the store, you would actually, when you say associated with the store, you would get an application ID and a package family name assigned. And then you just copy and paste these onto your website. And then when somebody goes to your website, they'll find that, they'll see the meta tag, and that's going to send them straight onto the store to look for your app, right? Another one that I want to throw you out there with regards to discovery when you get your app ready. Obviously, there's all these logos like available on, I said iOS Store, available on Apple Store, or whatever that is. We have the exact same thing. So when you have your website, we have the available on Windows Store logos. Here's the link if you want to do it, if you want to look it up afterwards. It's just a nice thing to have with regards to discovery, making sure that people are finding your app as fast as they can, right? Which we do a lot of work around, you know, for that. With regards to reach, the Windows Store is pretty much everywhere that we can export Windows, which is the whole world except for like five countries that we are not allowed to put, to actually export Windows into. So we're out there in like 230 some markets. We have local pricing in like, and this is actually older data. So we might have a few more markets now, but we used to have local pricing on 70 plus markets. And then, you know, if you look at the top 40 or top 50 markets, top 40 markets by GDP, we actually, you know, have local pricing on all those markets, right? We're out there in 100 languages, and that's the one that I want to remind you of. If you write an application, right, a lot of people write an application that's English only, right? And when you think about Windows, we sell around the world. You write an application that's just localizing, right? Even if you crowdsource it with your friends, that might make a huge difference to somebody, right? Like, for example, when I write my applications, when I used to write my applications, I speak several languages, so I localize it to Spanish just because, you know, I was born and raised in Mexico. And then I found out, like, yeah, people actually, you know, got a decent number of downloads from there. So when you think about your application, definitely consider that, oh, what are other markets? What are other languages? What can I do to make sure that I'm truly global? Because we sell a lot of Windows outside of the U.S., right? So so that's an area where if you're here from the U.S., you're kind of thinking, you know, slightly, oh, hey, this is our market, and, you know, we sell a lot of Windows outside of the U.S., so make sure you can go back and think about the other languages that you're doing. There, you know, standard localization, RESX, whatever approach you want to do for localization, you'll be able to do that, and then just, you know, localize your app, ship it, you know, in our store application. When you submit, just select the languages, and you'll be okay. It'll be very, very straightforward. With regards to the economics, so this is kind of a broader section of economics, but I'll start with the developer registration. So we have, so this is, and actually the title is probably wrong, because yesterday I told you, developer registration is free. To register and get your account developed and all that stuff, not a problem. When you try to go into the store and register so that you can have a store account so you can publish, that's when, you know, some people have to pay. And here's kind of the three tiers that we have. The first one is if you're a student or a startup, you know, especially everybody in this room, like if you're in this area, because we have a lot of opportunities there. If you're a student, we have a program called DreamSpark. If you're a startup, we have a program called BizSpark, where you should be able to get a free registration to publish. So talk to your local evangelists if you know them and see what you can do. Otherwise, it's only $49 to publish as an individual. Right. So, and the difference between publishing as an individual and a business is, well, there's more overhead on us validating the business. That's why it's more expensive, right? Because if you say, "Hey, I'm an individual," we pretty much take your word, we take your tax ID, whatever country you're in, whatever the equivalent of your tax ID is, and then we let you go, like we let you get through. If you're a business, we have to validate the business, called, you know, somebody responsible, like, to acknowledge that, hey, we're publishing on behalf of this business and everything else. So there's a little bit of a difference between the two of this. A lot of people say, well, if I can do the exact same thing, why don't I just go always for the $49? And the reason, there's about two or three capabilities that we do require you to be a business for. To access the document library is the only one that's pretty big. Because the documents library is a shared repository for all of our users, right? It's a kind of a very sacred place for us. We want to make sure that you're not doing something in there. We will validate through certification. The APIs limit a lot of that so that the user confidence stays high. But still, to write to the documents library is kind of something that we think is a privilege, and for that we require that you have a business account. So that's one of the differences that I would highlight. If you want to see all the differences, there's only like three of them, and the link to this URL will tell you exactly what the differences are and will help you choose an account. Either one will get you publishing, you know, relatively quick. So Aaron mentioned this yesterday, but I want to highlight it a little bit just to make sure there's no questions or anything like that. So our revenue sharing, right, the opportunity for you to make money kind of works like this. First of all, we start you at 70%. Just like every other store, like, you know, the iOS store. And then after you make your first $25,000, right, which doesn't take a lot with regards to Windows scale, with regards to the number of users and stuff like that, after you made your first $25,000, we jump you to 80%. So from there on, you'll be making 80% instead of 70%. And that stays cumulative, right? So your first application gets to 25. From there on, all the updates, everything else is always, you know, you're getting 80%. That also includes everything that, you know, a person uses or a user will use to purchase in your app. So if you have an application that has a subscription or in a purchase, anything that's going through Microsoft Commerce, as long as, you know, if they're paying for, you know, the feature or whatever, all of that keeps adding on to your 25. It's not something where you say, oh, I have to sell $25,000 worth of apps, right? Which would be like, hey, I have to sell 20,000 apps. No, if you're doing in-app purchase and somebody is just, you know, spending $6 per user, then you'll get there much quicker with, you know, 4,000 users or something like that. So that's just something for you to know with regards to how we do it. With regards to pricing, something you have to think about too. Our lowest price that you look at is $149, right? So we don't have 99-cent applications on our store. We did a lot of the research. People came back to us. You know, like some people said, "Oh, can people pay $149 and all that?" Microsoft did a lot of research and surveying. So on that side, we feel very comfortable. We're seeing the, you know, the adoption out there for apps be very positive. And then we have trials, so that's a big deal where people are willing to spend the money if they tried your application a little bit. So $149 is the lower prices. And then after that, we go with a tier pricing model. So if you want your price to be $1.77, because it's a lucky number, it's not going to happen. We go $149, then $199, $249, $399. That's not the exact tier, but you get the idea that the prices are kind of fixed, or there's a tier model that you have to follow. You can't just say, oh, I want to be $666, right? So that's just kind of where we're at. With regards to the business models, this is just for you to plan your application and figure out, hey, what are the synergies that I can come up across several business models. We have very, very flexible economics, right? So the first thing that we have is we give you a Microsoft Commerce API so that you can do, you know, first of all, people can purchase your app and they can also do in-app purchasing, you know, and we'll talk about trial conversions and all this stuff. But you can use our Microsoft Commerce APIs for anything. We also give you a Microsoft advertisement option. So we have our ad team has, you know, an offer there. They've got, you know, providers. They have ads. It's very, very easy to sign up. You just download them. You know, very much like you saw me do earlier today when we did maps and, you know, live. You go download a little SDK. You drag and drop, and then they start serving ads. So on that side, it's very easy to get started with that. And then we give you our version of Microsoft Analytics. I definitely don't consider this in-app analytics. I think this gives you a lot of the, you know, segmentation on the market, you know, who's installing your app, where are they coming from, and all those things. But there's not like, oh, this person spent, you know, 45 minutes playing this game, or this person's are, everybody's using this level more than these other levels, or this feature more than these other other feature. So our analytics right now is just kind of, hey, this is how you're doing with regards to the business, how you're selling your applications. They're very useful, but I just want to make sure you understand kind of where we're at. Now, if you don't like our APIs, you can use third-party commerce APIs, right? So, for example, if you are, you know, the Chicago Tribune or Financial Times, or if you are, I'm thinking too many newspapers that are outside of the U.S., but like, you know, the Italy Republica or something like that. If you sell something and you have your own subscription model, you can use that, right? And when you use your own subscription model, you don't give us any of that money. It doesn't count towards your $25,000 that you have to make to get a higher cut, but if you're not using our system at all, you're never giving us anything anyway. So if you have your own payment system, we will let you use it. If you're eBay and you want to use PayPal, or if you're you know, a newspaper and have your own subscription, if you're Barnes & Noble and you're selling your books and magazines, all of those, you can use your third-party commerce API, no restrictions, and you can actually get 100% of the money. Go ahead. You could use Sora. Yep. So I'm not familiar with Sora. So, but any, like, the way we look at it is, right, our SDK, our platform, you know, if you're looking at them, we give you a specific set of APIs. You saw yesterday from Sean, you can call any REST service. So I'm guessing whatever you would come up, any service, any third-party service out there, It's just going to be SSL, you know, some REST service out there. So yes, as long as you meet the requirements for certification, which are just technical requirements, like, hey, are you using valid APIs, nothing, you know, that we're not supposed to have, yes, you can use any service you want. We're also working with some of these vendors to actually come up with new payment models. For example, PayPal will have APIs for our platform, right? So you can go back and work with them directly. I don't know of anybody working with Sora, so I'm not familiar with it enough. I don't know either one. I'm not in the finance, like, there's a team, and I know we're working with some of the partners out there, but I'm not in, like, I'm not as familiar with what partners we're working with. So on that side, I've definitely worked with a lot of partners that have done it themselves, where, like, hey, they use the system they already had, and it's worked out for them. But I'm not part of the team that has been looking at the partnerships. So if you need more details, just drop me an email, and I'll try to get you an answer. But this is something we feel strongly, that that flexibility of people not having to argue back and forth is a big deal. This week, if you haven't read, like, even Microsoft and iOS are going back and forth about Office apps that are selling in iOS, right? So this whole, hey, you're getting, you know, a bigger piece of the pie for doing very little is something that we acknowledge that it's painful for, you know, application developers, and we want to make sure that if you have your models, we stay out of the way. We want to make sure we have really cool apps, and, you know, we want to make sure that your app is on our platform, and this is not a, you know, a blocker or actually a friction point for you to get your app on our platform. Was there a question over here? I saw it. Yep. Same thing for advertisement. If you don't want to use the Microsoft advertisement and you want to use your own system, great, right? We will, again, do the same thing. We have really great support for both, like, you know, obviously we have an HTML platform where you could build UI, and then we have a WebView where you can bring HTML onto the SAML platform. We have a WebView control that you can use to bring HTML. So if you want to serve your own ads to a different platform, we won't stay on the way. You serve your ads, you get your money, and we're okay. Right, we'll certify with that. And then the last thing, third-party analytics is the same thing, right? If somebody wants to do third-party analytics, if you have a specific vendor that you work with all the time, if you're doing cross-platform today and you want to make sure you're comparing apples to apples or oranges to oranges, that should be fine, right? So you can use your third-party analytics. We're very flexible on the economics. So this is a new feature. Aaron mentioned this feature yesterday. This is a big deal to a lot of people. We've learned that this is a really great practice. From Windows Phone, we saw that, you know, people that do trials make more money. A lot of people think, well, if I give out a trial, you know, people are going to try it and they're not going to buy it, right? Well, you can go back and say, hey, try it for 7 days. There's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of models that you can do that. On Windows, trials is actually a best practice. Not only because we think it's going to make you more money, but also because think about the 700 million devices out there, right? They've been sold over the last 18 months, right? Some of them will have touch. Some of them will have a DirectX 10 or DirectX 11 card. Everybody's going to have something a little different. When you're getting into Windows, you're getting into the really, really big scale of hardware, right? You know, hundreds of languages, hundreds of countries, any kind of hardware. Right, so having, or, you know, I would tell you from my side, offering a trial is a really good thing because you're going to even get better reviews. I've had a few apps where, like, and I tend to be on the bleeding edge of hardware, so I've actually had apps that I've downloaded, you know, something, and I was like, hey, this doesn't work with my driver, right? And it tends to be, hey, I have a driver that's beta, and, you know, it's bleeding edge, so I'm sure it will work later. But the same will happen with something that's 2 years old, right? My, you know, my kid loves Minecraft. And I have 20 PCs in my house, and, you know, I can only run Minecraft of 2, right? And it's a big deal. Like, we had to go buy the right video card. Even though I had much more modern hardware, I had, you know, really big rig gaming systems, it didn't work on the latest bleeding-edge stuff. So whatever you're doing, make sure that you offer, or I would recommend that you offer a trial, just because that's actually going to lead to higher reviews in a lot of cases. That's my personal experience, my personal advice on that. We have two types of trials, time limit trials and feature differentiated trial. What that means is I can say, hey, you know, try it, for example, for 7 days. When you go into submit your application to the store, you can actually say, hey, my price is going to be $8. Actually, this is not $8. It should be, you know, something in the tier. I need to go back and not be funny on that slide. You can say, hey, my price is going to be $149, and then you can actually choose, you know, hey, I want to do a one-day trial, seven-day trial, whatever you want in there, right? And then Windows will handle all of that. So you don't have to write any code. You can write your application and say, hey, I'm not going to write a single line of code about trial. I'm just going to go in there, submit it to the store, and then Windows do that. Right. If anybody's written real software, like, you know, in on your own, and you've tried to do the equivalent of trial, it's really, really hard. Right. I did it many, many years ago, and it's like, you know, we used to have this thing like, oh, let's do a 30-day trial, and then people will just turn the clock back. Right. If you go any kind of thing, they will find a way. They'll go into the BIOS. They'll do all kinds of things to try to get around it. Right. So we've seen a lot of that. On this side, Windows takes care of all of that, making sure that they're not, you know, that everything they're doing is legal and that they're not very quickly getting around it. And you can just, you know, offer a trial without writing a single line of code. Now, offering a trial without writing a single line of code is not that smart, to be honest. I think you should put the button that says buy now, because you're going to see in a minute that it's a few lines of code to buy. Right. So you should go ahead and put it. But if you want to do it without writing a single line of code, you can do it. Here's actually the API, and I'm going to demo it so I can go fast. Here's the API that we use. So if you're looking at, hey, how do I convert a trial, it's very, very straightforward. It's an async API, of course. You just go in there and say, hey, you know, get current license information, and then just subscribe to the license change so that you know it's actually changed. And then you just say, hey, if this application is on trial, request app purchase async. And when you do that, you get that standard Windows UI. It's going to have the metadata from your app, so it's going to have your price, and it's going to have your description, and everything will feel very secure to the user because it's going to be the standard Windows experience. And with that one line of code, you can convert them from a trial onto a purchase app, right? So just put your button there and remind them that they're, you know, that they need to convert if they like the app. If you don't do it, let's say you choose to be a seven-day trial and you don't do it, what's going to happen is on the seventh day, there'll be a little X next to the, or, you know, in the tile for your application. There'll be a little X, right, that Windows will put in there for you, and then the user will click on it, and then they're going to get a message that said, hey, this application, your trial of this application expired. Go ahead and purchase. And they click on that. We send them to the store. They purchase, and you get your money. Go ahead. What if it's currently running at the time it expires? That's a good question. I haven't tried that. I'm assuming at some point it will expire. Like, you know, it might be that I would expect that we let it run. But let me get back to you on that, because I haven't tried that. I'll go back and try it. It's going to be painful to submit an app and, you know, go through it, but I'm going to try it just for you. So
7 days.
Keep it running for 7 days and stare at it directly. I'm like, okay. Honey, I can't leave right now. Sorry. Trash? No, 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 honey. I'll take it out next week. Go ahead. Best practice on how long the trial should be. So I don't have any data. It's a really great question. I should try to get you some from my side. I can tell you that the few apps that I wouldn't say I code, because that's unfair to the people that are coding with me. The few apps that I'm trying to make money on, we do 7 days. We tried 1 day, and we saw, one of the things that we did is we tried 1 day and we saw how many times people ran the application within 1 day for one app, and we felt that was not enough. You know, it was like people will run it, people install it, check it out, and then not come back, or run it for 10 minutes and then walk away. With 7 days, we're seeing a little bit more of a, hey, you know, they'll come back the next day, and we make sure we have a live tile, and we make sure we're reminding them. So the one thing I tell you is, do not put anything on your live tile that says your trial expires tomorrow, right? Don't go there. Just put something, you know, like, hey, you know, level 2 is ready for you, or, you know, your friends are waiting for you to, you know, try to reach level 3 or something like that. So go ahead. Yes, it's a drop down. And I believe when you do the drop down, I think it's 30, and there might be a 365. It's either 30 or there's a 365, but it's kind of a, like, lean, it's a, you know, it's a tier model the same. You can have free apps. So, you know, one of the things that you can do is you can actually go in there and say, hey, I want a free app, that kind of a freemium model, where I want a free app that people can then purchase and get extra features, right? So you can do that if you want it to be, like, if you want to, you know, two-month trial, maybe you should just consider giving it away and putting ads or doing something else to monetize it during that period, because that's a long time. I'll go back to the UI and make sure I get it for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that was it. Go ahead. Yep. So let me make sure if you can give the microphone, but what I heard is, can you enable feature by feature? Is that right?
Right.
Yep.
Payment by a feature.
Yep. So yes, you can do in-app purchase within the model, and I'll show you this in a minute, so just in case so you get some ideas. And this is actually a good resource for you. If you're getting started, this will be a good resource for you to try. I had three instances of the app, so I'm not sure which one I'm running, but I'll show you in a minute. So yes, you can go in and purchase feature by feature. So for example, this is one of the applications that I told you in that Windows 8 Camped in a Box stuff, where we have hands-on labs for you. In 4 hours, you build this application from scratch, to the end. And this has, for example, right here, so I have, for example, Semantic Zoom, where I can navigate across different recipes and stuff like that. And you can see here, navigation, app bar. This is showing you how to capture photos, how to do video, how to do like a secondary tile, right? So I can pin it to start, notifications. All the features that you've learned over the last 2 days, they're going to be in these applications. So if you're looking for, some hands-on labs, we're going to put the Beginner Ranch hands-on lab with the content. And these will also, we're going to put a link to something like this with the content so you can learn. But to go back to your point, so for example here, I can go back here and in settings, this is actually right now in trial mode. So these right there, you see like there's a, hey, update to the full version for $12.99, and this is the one line of code that you're looking at. And let me show you a little extra. So, and this is all real code, by the way, except for this is the simulator. So if you're going to try doing in-app or in-app purchase or trial conversion and everything, we give you a simulator. So this is not the Windows official UI. As you can see, this looks a lot uglier. If anybody knows COM, this is returning SOK. That'll bring some memories to some of you. But this is the simulator, and this is just actually calling onto that, request purchase async API that I told you a minute ago. And I'm just going to go ahead and purchase the app. Now, if, for example, I can come back here, you'll see here I can go into the Italian recipes, and those are extra within this app. So even though I already purchased the app and I've converted it, so I bought the app. Now, the Italian recipe is something that's extra within the app in the example that we give you. Right, so I can come back here, and I'm in the Italian recipes, and I still have to pay an extra 99 cents, which should be $1.49 there, right? So that's kind of where like you can do in-app purchase. So here, for example, I'll go back, click on that, and then I'll continue, and then the recipes should come down. And again, this is a version that I came out, like I had three versions running because I have debug versions of this, so I must have something broken here. But yes, you can do that where from within your model, you can say, hey, I want to do in-app purchase, feature differentiated stuff. You can do that. So if you have a game, for example, the HitSense Draw a Stickman Epic that you saw today, they have like different levels. And as you go, you can purchase the levels one at a time or four at a time or whatever. We give you the APIs. You'll see this slide in a minute that has a little bit of those APIs so you get an idea. Go ahead.
So you showed us capabilities that we can specify on the app so that the device capabilities it's looking for. Mm-hmm. I guess I heard later on that it's possible to have a device that may not have that capability and you can test for it. Will the store allow an app that asks for a certain set of capabilities to be shown to a user and installed on a device if that device doesn't have that capability?
Yes. So the store will do that. And again, the example is there. For example, if I require a webcam and the app, like my machine might not have a webcam connected now, but if I have a USB webcam, it'll be available later, right? That's one of the scenarios why we allow you to do that. The other one is one of the things that's really interesting about Windows 8, and this is actually worth highlighting for you, we have a very flexible licensing model. So when I buy an application here, if I buy an application on this machine, right, I can install it in five machines, right? So for example, I have my work PC and I never ever watch Netflix at work, right? But the application somehow managed to install itself there. So that's like, you know, an area where I would have five different PCs, and Netflix is a free app, so I guess that wouldn't require a license. But for apps that do require it, I can go back and install it in up to five different machines. And we have more different other nice features with regards to licensing. For example, if I have a machine where me and my kids share it, I can install the app on that machine, and he and I can, you know, use the app when each one of us is logged in. So there's nice ways that we make that licensing very effective for users, such that they're getting a lot of value for your $149 if they can install it on five PCs. It's associated with Live ID, so it's not something where like a dorm is going to share, you know, the app. And there's also a limit of five. Go ahead. If the machine is lost, broken, whatever, is there a way to remove the machine from your five? Yes, absolutely. When you go into Microsoft account, like into our website, you have something that says, here are the five devices that you have kind of activated. I might be using the wrong term from their terminology, but you can remove one from there and say, hey, I want to have only this many. We will detect for you. Go ahead.
Hi, I have three questions. One is is there any limitations for free applications versus the paid applications opposed to that registration fee per annum? That's one question. And then how do we update our apps if I add some more features, and what is the process? Third one is there any possibility to do the coupons if I want to give a free to my customers? Is there any possibility? Thank you.
Okay, so let me walk through them one at a time. So the first one, I started thinking immediately about the second question. So the first one was, is there any limitations between free and, you know, paid? Or how many you can do? The how many free applications you can have is something Microsoft still learning and discussing. So right now we haven't published the number. For example, Windows Phone, the number was first, it was five, and that was too low, and they went to 100. And that was, you know, if you ask me, that was a little too high. So Microsoft is still learning. We are working, because in some cases, some publishers have, you know, already hundreds of apps. So we are working to come up with the number. And right now, I don't think we've actually announced the final number. But, you know, for example, like, if you submit 20, you should be okay for free. Paid has never had a limit, just like, you know, because we're sharing revenue with you there. So in both worlds, paid has never had a limit. But for free, we're still looking at what that number is going to be. So keep an eye on the website. There's a really great blog, blogs.msdn.com/Windows Store. That's where the Windows Store team blogs, and you know all the announcements and everything else goes there. So if anybody here is looking at, hey, let me learn more about the store, I highly recommend. You can spend an hour reading all their blogs from the last 2 or 3 months, and everything would be there. And that's where you'll be announced once we come up with the official final number. That was first question. The second question was, update process. So you submit an application to the store. So you submit version 1.0 onto the store. And we will certify it and we'll publish it for you. And then you will submit version 1.1 onto the store. And from the time you submit 1.0 to the time we've published 1.1, you're still 1.0 out there. Once 1.1 is, you know, your latest version, then 1.0 kind of goes away, right? And the users in the store, if you go into the store, the users will be reminded, like, hey, you have updates waiting. So you can come back into the store, and you'll see here, for example, I was trying to download for Ninja back when I didn't have. You see right here, I have eight updates waiting. I tried to update for Ninja last night from our hotel, and the Wi-Fi wasn't working, so that's why it had that error. But you see right here, I have eight updates waiting to happen. So the store, you can come here into the store, and it'll tell you, hey, here's your updates, and there's one single button to select all, install all the updates. So you know, they can do it bulk, or I can just come here and select one at a time, and then update one at a time for your application. That was part two or part three? And the last one is a coupon. We don't have a way for you to have a coupon from within, like, you know, through our store. We don't have a way for you to do coupons today. So on that side, we don't have a way. I can't even think. I would talk to me offline. I'm curious about the scenario a little bit more, and then I can connect you to our team and see what we could do there. But as I'm not thinking of a coupon right now, Yeah. I could think of many different ways. Like, for example, we do have in-app purchase, and you can kind of have differentiated features, right? So you could have a specific feature that, has a low price or something that allows, you know, enables more capabilities within your app if you code it. But I'm not an expert on that scenario for coupons. So go ahead if you have a comment. Okay, so I'll definitely pass that back to the store, to the store team, and let me find out more. If I find something that's interesting, I'll try to put a blog or share a little bit back. I'm not familiar with the scenario, so I haven't run into it enough. So I can try to get a better answer from there. Go ahead.
Hi. Can we change the price? For example, start at $11.99 and go to $149 later on, or?
Yes. Can you change the price? Yes, you can change the price anytime you want. So,
if you're taking suggestions back to the store people, another one would be the ability to have affiliates, but for physical, like for example, there are some apps that I've done. Like people said, hey, if there was some sort of a card that I could pass out to people. Like a merchant would then, have a card, and on it would be like a discount code, so their customers could go and purchase the app, and then maybe they get, an affiliate fee out of it. So, you know what I mean? Like a store would have a postcard on it that would have, you know, our app on it, and an end user would come in and pick up a card, and they'd go in and then purchase the app, like from the app store. But then the merchant gets a little percentage, you know, affiliate fee. Okay. I've had three or four cases of that, actually, where physical, you know, affiliate fee to be split with somebody else kind of a thing would have been awesome.
Okay. So I'm going to do two things because I want to be respectful of everybody else's time. So first of all, I wrote down both your suggestions, and I'll get you better answers. I would make a comment on your scenario that I think might be interesting. We do have, so for example, one of the things that's really interesting for our, remember, we have lots and lots of PCs and lots of OEMs. Right, and OEMs, they ship applications that are differentiated, so they actually work out deals with specific application vendors or publishers, and, you know, they ship, and an OEM can actually include a limited number, not, you know, 77 apps, but they have a small number of applications that they can ship with an image. So if you go buy a Sony Bio, you know, it might come with something like Evernote. Right, or you might come with a specific app that lights up some Sony hardware or something like that. So there's models like that. Those are worked out between. So it's not the exact same thing as an affiliate, but those are worked out between the OEM and the publisher. And it just, you know, they vary with regards to the arrangement. I know you want to be a little more generic, and I wrote it down. So I'll let you know what I find out. Those are really great suggestions that. What are the criteria that get applications? It's a complicated. So, what are the criteria that get applications promoted? It's a complicated algorithm / editorial / curation. So, so there's nothing we can share. We would tell you write a great app.
Is there a little bit of randomness?
So the question is there a little bit of randomness there? I hope not. I expect not, because we have an editorial team that spends a lot of time looking at reviews, looking at data, right? There's definitely something there, like, you know, with partnership, with quality, with certain things where, like, for example, like, people always ask me, well, if it's 100% quality driven, how come like Netflix be on the front page within 24 hours, right? So there's, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, there's a team that editorializes all that, and they look at the feedback, they look at the data. So the best way to climb all the way up to the top is to be a very popular app, right? But there's an editorial team that, you know, looks at all of that, and they prioritize things on their own. It's not something we've published, and if you ask any of them, they'll just tell you, write a really great app. Even I internally with my apps.
So, being
Yeah, being one of the more popular apps on every other platform, if you guys have them, is definitely going to get you more attention, right? That's why we're here talking to iOS developers, because we know you have a lot of really great apps that people already love, and we expect to be successful very quickly, right? So we think you can take the concepts that you have and just port them to, you know, the porting is easy compared to, like, the business logic, the web services, all the stuff that you've already done. So again, I don't have the, there's definitely an algorithm, there's editorials, so I don't have any, the answer on that one. So this just shows you, if you're going to, you know, do, you know, anything, you know, in-app purchase, trial, or anything like that, we do give you a simulator file that you can use just for testing. You'll never ship with anything like this, but we do give you a file that you can use for testing and test different products, see what the metadata is going to look like. And everything else. So you can come back here and say, hey, here's a simulator file, then turn trial on and, you know, test it and turn it off and everything else. So you have a way to actually simulate the purchases. You get that uglier UI, the simulator UI, not the official system UI, but because we didn't want to take the risk of somebody, you know, giving somebody else an app and then have them think, oh, they're taking real money or anything like that. But you do have an API that, you know, through the simulator. The simulator has the exact same set of APIs than our real licensing information, and then you can configure the simulator with this XML file. And the file can be called anything. We just have a specific format that you can find from our dev center. So, with regards to advertising choices, I already said, hey, you can use Microsoft Advertisement or you can use your own. And I already told you, hey, for us, it's very straightforward. Download the Ad SDK, drag and drop into your page, into, you know, the place where you want it to be on layout. You have to go in and get an application, or get an app, kind of a publisher ID from PubCenter and configure certain things like what kind of applications you have. And then, you know, you're ready to go. It's very, very straightforward for you to use the Microsoft system. And again, if you want to use your third-party system, we're totally for it. We want to make sure that you're successful and that you make money. With regards to submission and, you know, everything else, I call these transparent terms. And again, even yesterday as we were talking about, our goal with, from a Microsoft standpoint is to be very, very, very clear. Right, I mean, we're not going to be very relaxed. Right, we're not going to be like I see other platforms that I'm like, oh, you know, they don't seem to care. Kind of anything gets through. We're not going to relax the quality bar, but we want to be very, very clear. We want to be very transparent with, hey, here's what you should do, here's what you've done, and you know, here's what, how you're going to get through on with regards to certification. So, so our terms, like, you know, our certification requirements, we try our best to be as concise and as clear as we can. We don't have carve-out categories on our Windows Store, so if you're saying if you're selling books or music or whatever, we're okay. We're not going to go in there and say, "Oh, you can't sell music because we have a Zune," or "We can't sell books because we have a, you know, bookstore or anything like that." So there's no carve-outs within our world. And then with regards to the requirements, again, we've done we have your requirements and we have documents that explain the requirements and tell you here. These are the five top things that people get confused about, right? Because, again, sometimes, like, for example, age rating, right? If we're very specific. If you have, for example, if your application uses the internet, right, we don't want you to do a 3+. You have to be a little higher so that people know what they're doing. Certain things like that, right? Privacy policy. If you have, if you're using the internet, you will require a privacy policy. So we try to explain it to you and be as transparent as we can. Again, I'm not going to tell you that we are more flexible or more lenient because we're not, right? Quality matters a lot, and we're, you know, we're trying our best to do that. So on that side, but we will definitely try to be transparent. One of the ways that we do that, which is definitely something you should look at before, you create your app, or before you submit your app, is we give you this tool called the Windows App Certification Kit. We call it the WAC. And what it is this little application. When you install the tools, these will be installed. So when you install Visual Studio, these will be installed for you. And then what you do is you run this application, and you just tell it, hey, go run my app. And then this app is going to run a specific set of tests. Like, for example, it will check that you have only Windows SDK compliant APIs. So if you're running Win32, C++, and you're using something that is not in what we call the Windows SDK, right, it will flag it and it will tell you, hey, you're using these three methods or these three Win32 DLLs that are not allowed. Right? You also look at your, for example, performance with regards to suspend and resume. Right? Because we have requirements that said, hey, you must suspend within 5 seconds. You must resume within a specific number of seconds. So you look at all of that, and it's going to give you a report. Right? And if you fail the report on the WAC, you're 99.9% or maybe even 100% sure, depending on what your failure is, that you're going to fail certification. So don't submit something that fails WACs because, it's not going to help you, right? You're going to just wait 2 or 3 days for the certification person to come back to you with, hey, you failed WAC. So on that side, definitely run the test before. Again, we have specific, we call them Windows application labs all around the world. So right here in San Francisco, like literally 1 week out of the month, we have a place that you can go in, register. It's all free. You can just come in, play with all the hardware, and run WAC tests on different sets of hardware if you don't have them. Go ahead.
Hi. What are you doing in terms of privacy?
What are we doing in terms of?
Privacy.
Privacy?
Yeah.
So what do you mean, what do we do?
Well, it's pretty big right now. Is there any certification for privacy?
Yeah, so in terms of privacy, all we do is we have specific criteria that we said, hey, here's some things that we know require a privacy policy, right? Again, the one that surprises people is the fact that if you're using the internet connection, we tell you you must have a privacy policy. And our requirement on privacy is very straightforward. All we do is we tell you, hey, you have to have a privacy policy within your app, or at least the privacy, an option for a user to see the privacy policy. If that links onto a website, that's okay, right? But when you submit your application to the store, if you're required to have a privacy policy, we have to have something that we can link to from within the store, and you are actually presenting from within your app, such that the user always has a way to look at your privacy, right? Now, we don't do anything else beyond that. Like, we don't, we don't enforce anything for the user. The user has to read the terms, and if they don't like it, they just uninstall it, and everything goes away when they uninstall it. Everything for your app goes away when they uninstall you. We make sure that all of that is safe. So we don't enforce anything other than making sure you have it and that the user can see it. So. Yep. So the question is, what about notifications to the user if the app is going to ask, is going to use a specific capability? Those vary depending on the capability. So for example, if I go in there and code an app that uses, for example, camera, the very first time the user installs that app, the user will be prompted to say, hey, do you want to use camera? And the other thing that we do is that, for example, if you do use camera, I'll just use one of these. If you do use camera, we add something onto settings. You can see here we have the about page, which is a custom thing that this application does. And you see that to all of our applications, Microsoft, on the settings, we will automatically add this extra tab called permissions. So for example, right now, this application uses notifications and webcam and microphone. So at any one time, the user can come in and turn this off, right, or turn it back on and off as much as they want to. And this is not something that's in the app. This is something that Windows injects onto every app, right? So we make sure that they have it. And if you saw this application run for the very first time, it's going to have a dialogue that says, hey, when I try to use the camera, it's going to have a dialogue that says, hey, can I use, these applications trying to access the camera, is that okay? And if the user says no, you're out of luck. You get an exception if you don't handle the error, or you get an exception where you need to handle the error, and then you move on. So, So, oops, went back to it. Once you submit to the store, again, we have an SLA that's around 5 days. Usually we post every now and then when we are falling behind, like, you know, right for lunch, we had to put an announcement that says, hey, we're going to take longer than 5 days for a few days. We were just getting, you know, too many apps every day, right, more than we could handle. So we let you know exactly where you're at. When you submit, you have something that looks like this where you're always aware of what's going on. Like, you tell you, hey, here's where you're at. You know, here's, like, we're running security tests, or we're running technical compliance and content compliance. And as you submit more and more, you kind of get a better idea of how long everything takes, because some of the tests are automated, right? So, for example, technical compliance or security, some of those things are going to, you know, go very quick, and other things are going to take a little bit longer because they might be more manual. Right. We have people look at our applications. I can tell you this if you want some advice that's interesting, is our certification people are very, very thorough. Right. If you write a description in there that says we have hundreds of recipes and you have 99 recipes, they might count them. And you know, they might actually fail and say, hey, the description said you had hundreds of recipes and we only counted 77. So make sure that you have a really accurate description. Make sure that you're only asking for the capabilities that you need. Our certification team is quite thorough. I've been there before where I said something had, you know, hundreds of recipes, and there wasn't hundreds of recipes when we submitted, because it was our first ride and everything, and, you know, we were told there wasn't enough, and we spent 3 days waiting for that answer, right? So if you want to save yourself time, write something accurate, and then update it as you go. Another thing that I would tell you with regards to advice, if you decide that you want to change the metadata, like if you say, hey, I made a mistake and I want to go from hundreds of recipes to 77 recipes, we will ask you to submit the application again. So make sure that your metadata is ready when you go the first time around, because if you get that wrong, you're going to be wading through the process of certifying. So make sure that you go through it, and because that's when the certification happened, and we don't allow you to go back and change it, a lot of the metadata, unless there's specific things. Something like price, it's different, but, you know, if you're changing colors or descriptions or anything like that, in some cases you end up having to submit. So make sure you have really good metadata when you start. So, again, we do give you some sort of analytics. These screenshots out of date. I just haven't had applications that I know that I can publish data for. But we just give you analytics with who's installing, where are they coming from, and our analytics, you know, what are the ages. And our analytics will continue to increase over time. But this is kind of where we're starting. You see your ratings, you see your feedback, you see, you know, all your finance reports, like how much money you made and all that. The analytics for the finances are all there. Go ahead.
Once an app's approved, can you go and change the metadata, like descriptions and stuff?
No, once an app's approved, again, this is where it varies by what you're changing. Right. But if you submit an application and you have a description and everything and it goes through the whole store, and you decide, hey, I want to change something, depending on what field you want to change, we might tell you, hey, you need to submit a new version of the app, and we'll recertify to make sure that it matches.
On iOS, if you have a special sale, the description field is one of the things that you can change, and it just immediately takes, because you go in and add a line and say, you know, Thanksgiving Day sale, you know, whatever shows up in there. So
yep.
It sounds like you can't change that.
So the question there is, I'll be very candid, like I haven't memorized which fields require a resubmission or not. I will have to check on whether description is one of the few. But I know that some fields do require you resubmit, and other fields do not. I don't want to guess, because I hate to get those things wrong and then have somebody come and say, well, I didn't plan it right because of what you told me. So that's it. That's kind of where we're at. I always like to close, and this is an interesting one for you, because this was our first kind of iOS reaching out to iOS people, it's kind of an interesting. I used to do Windows Phone evangelism, so I can tell you, like with Ben, I worked on this for a long while, and it was a lot of fun and everything. But as much as I love Windows Phone and I love what we're doing with Windows Phone 8, I definitely see that the opportunity to make money with Windows is much, much larger than anything, I have ever seen, right? Now, I did miss out on the whole, if I could have predicted back in 2008 that I could write a fart application that was going to, make me rich, I would have been there, right? Even though it was not as big, or it could have not been as big, it still, I would have been there, right? So I missed a lot of that wagon. I missed a lot of that, hey, get rich quick with a very low quality app. Where we are with Windows today is pretty simple, right? We think the opportunity is very large just because we have a very large install base. Like this slide is a little old, but we used to have 700 million devices or 690 million licenses of Windows 7 already sold. If you compare that to Android or iOS, that's in some cases twice as much, right? In some cases a little bit more. So when I look at it, right, and I've seen predictions where, for example, people talk, certain analysts, not Microsoft, but certain analysts said something like, oh, there'll be 400 million Windows 8 units sold in the next 14, 16 months. I'm looking at that number, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not buying it. I'm a cynic. I'm a skeptic. But, man, even if that margin of error is high, right, when you're talking about 400 million, that's a pretty big, you know, number where if the margin of error wasn't, you know, was still pretty high, that's still a big number, right? Again, we launched, and within the first month, 40 million licenses were sold, right? We have holidays coming up, so we think we're going to be catching up out there, and looking at the opportunity is really, really big. If you look at, you know, 233 markets, 100 and some languages and everything else, our executives just flat out say this is the most significant developer opportunity ever. Again, to me, it's the most significant and the best opportunity, the biggest opportunity that I see today. I can tell you that having written apps for, you know, multiple platforms and having not made a lot of money on a few because there's just too many apps already. Go ahead.
I forgot.
All right. Well, that was it for me. I want to thank you very much for spending 2 days with us.
Okay, I remember now. How do you report the earnings to the internationally, to the government, or it's a, how it is handled?
How do we report earnings international? Is that what you're saying?
Earnings to the government.
Okay. You're asking way beyond what I know. I know that when I go into to register as a developer, I give it I give it a social security or an EID for my business, and so I give it a tax ID, and then I know Microsoft reports it to the government because I get a tax, I get my whatever it is, my tax thingy that says how much I owe them every year. So that's as far as I know, to be honest. I know for international, like if you're in Europe and you need BAT or whatever, we have specific kind of agreements that you sign, and then everything happens through that. I know that if you're a developer, and again, remember, we have local currency in a lot of countries, so you get paid on your currency, and we report back to your government. If you need more details than that, just come and ask me offline, because you're asking something that I'm just happy to get the check. Right, and when I get the checks, I'm like, hey, it's okay that Microsoft took 20%, and it's okay that the government's going to take a little bit of it too, right? I don't mind sharing the wealth when it's coming in. So it's just the rules that that we live in, and it's just I'm used to that. So that's it. Thank you very much again for coming. And we can do the raffle stuff. And if anybody has any more questions, I'll still be here. And keep an eye out. Try the platform. You got the tools. You've got the a little bit of the knowledge. So go try things out. And feel free to always send me any feedback. If you're seeing stuff like, hey, this is different. We wish we had this. I'm always eager to hear what we're doing because we're getting into a new space for us.